Remember, you can reach us on 434-1790. We are looking today at Arabaro's vision for education in the 21st century, whether or not it is still relevant. And I'm with a distinguished panel that includes Dr. Leroy McLean, George Pilgrim, and Khalil Kothiwala. We're happy to have the gentlemen here. We've also had an engagement with my callers. Khalil, when we went off the program, you were talking about this infamous postcode lottery in the United Kingdom, the idea that we could move away from a system where we compete for places in schools to one where you go to the school that's close to you, kind of similar to what happens with primary education in Barbados, that you go to your school in a zone. I do accept that there are some challenges, and I was going to just make the point to you that a standard postcode system or a standard zoning system would need to be amended to ensure that not only is there a mix of abilities in all schools, but you also have a mix, a socioeconomic mix in schools, because that is probably one of the single most important, and I'm sure that Dr. McLean will support me on this, one of the single most important indicators that would influence a person's educational attainment. So as a result, we have to ensure that if we don't have, let's say, a test that ensures that all students that have similar academic performance go to the same school, we also don't have a situation where you create schools that have students all of identical socioeconomic arrangements. And I think that if that is based on geographical factors, then certainly we're going to need to have a system that has a more creative zoning that ensures that persons that go to every school will have a range and a mix of socioeconomic status. The infamous educator, or the famous educator, Matthew Farley, always used to talk about this idea of mixed ability schooling. And it's a theory that suggests that there is really no impact negatively on bright students if they are forced to study at a school with other students. There is, however, a significant negative impact on students who are not quote unquote bright if they are essentially surrounded by students that have similar ability. And the idea of mixed ability schooling means that there's really no reason why you can't put students with different abilities in the same school environment, or indeed even in the same classroom, and expect and have a negative impact on the students' performance. It just does not work that way. All of us have to prepare for CXE in 5 years. And if all of us have to prepare for it in 5 years, there's really no reason why we all can't prepare for it at similar schools. And that's the way it goes. I don't know if we can go back to the lines or whether any of the panelists want to say anything before we do. Or can we just go back to the
Before you do go back to the phone lines, just one final, but if we are looking to reform our education system, the Caribbean Examinations Council serves as a measurement of the output of our system at the secondary level. I made the point earlier that education functions to some extent, or certainly fosters economic development. The CXE is a regional institution. Therefore, to what extent do we need to look at a certain level of economic integration to be able to have a functional regional economic development plan that allows us then to work in the reverse direction to create a CXE exam that can achieve that plan and then trickle down to the reform of the entire education system? But that is an entirely different conversation, and one that is incredibly more difficult than education reform, which is in and of itself difficult.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Khalil.
Peter, you will notice that when I speak of the transfers from primary to secondary, I always say I don't say the closest school to you. I say the school that is most convenient to get to. Right? Okay. Because you have a situation where right now, for example, you have schools in St. Michael that a lot of children from other parishes attend, because this is closer to where the parents work. So the parents can take them to school and then go to work, rather than having them at the school that is closest to home, that when the parents leave home, the children are still at home. When the children get back home, the parents are not yet home. So that may not, the closest school may not be the best school for the children to attend. And for those who are saying that the reverse may happen, look at the opportunities now. How many children from the inner Bridgetown area would now be attending Harrison College that previously would not have had the opportunity to do so? So if you can get a system, it's something we need to engage in and not just look at it as getting rid of the 11 plus, but give more thought to what we will replace it with before we even get to the point of saying we're getting rid of it.
All right. Okay, let's go back to the phones then. 434-1790. Good afternoon and welcome.
Good afternoon, Peter. How you doing?
Hey, good afternoon. How are you doing? I know this is your special area.
My special area?
Good afternoon. This is going to be an interesting contribution, I'm sure.
Yeah, he and I argue about this thing incessantly. You know, he's an old AC guy. But anyhow, you carry on smartly.
Good afternoon to everybody in the panel as well.
Afternoon, and welcome.
Let me start by saying something. Dr. McLean.
Good afternoon, man.
Good afternoon. But you see, you confuse me in a way. Because you start by the discussion on COVID and the deficiencies that have been brought about that we can now see in our education system, essentially because of our inability to utilize the technology that's available today to make the change that is required within our educational system. And then you proceed to speak about the educational system and the changes which you would like to see in the educational system without using the application of the same technology which you have just seen that we need to use. The idea of streaming people was an idea which is brought about because of the inability, the limitation of resources. So therefore you said, okay, well, you have a particular set of resources in one area, and you only have a few people that can utilize those resources at a time, so therefore you are then going to have an exam or whatever, and then determine the people that can utilize those resources. We have a situation now where technology allows anybody and everybody to access all the information in the world, to do anything essentially at any time. So therefore there's no need to have that sort of streaming anymore. So when I hear the language which is contemplated, about we create a school, let's say that is a technological school, and then we want to have that as a language school, and then we are going to determine which stream those children will go into. Generally speaking, from when I went to school, what I recognize is that a bright child is capable not just of doing languages or sciences, they can do whichever one they want. And in a lot of cases, they can do both. And in a lot of cases, they do both in subsequent, over the course of their life. So you might find some person who was interested in languages early on in their life. And then later on, they came across something in science that interests them and said, wait, you know something? I want to do this. I prefer to do this. And then they excel in that. That is what development of an individual is about and should be about. So therefore the whole idea and conversation of streaming children to me is nonsense. What you have to be able first and foremost to do is to provide access to every opportunity that is available for a person to explore. One of the problems I have with the conversation, which we continue to have about the abolition of the Common Entrance Exam, is because instead of looking at the fact that what the exam does or should do is to evaluate globally a child at the age of 11 and the ability of that child to communicate or to do whatever. Instead of doing that and then saying, okay, at 11, this child has certain abilities or doesn't have certain abilities, and we need to fix and remedy the things that we see that they're deficient in. So the question is, I would have to ask Peter, why is it that at 11, a child is able to sit an exam with dyslexia? Like, I mean, that problem should have been solved ever since. That should, it should be recognized early that the child has a problem. And it should be solved, so therefore when they get to 11...
That's the problem, Cyprian. That's the problem with you. You don't understand that dyslexia is not a problem that can be fixed. It's not like a flat tire. No, you can just fix it and the child can go on. You live with dyslexia. Isn't it your fix?
I understand that you live with dyslexia. When they say right. It's a problem, what I'm just... Hold on. Don't get tied up on the fact that I'm talking just about dyslexia. What I'm saying is that at 11 years old, if you sit an exam, and there is recognized that there have been certain deficiencies in terms of your ability to pass an exam at 11. So therefore, we should be looking at fixing that the primary school system to stop any child at 11 reaching that point where they do not have that capacity to pass that 11-plus exam.
Can I say something? Part of the reason why the problem is not fixed by 11 or even after 11 is because the focus is on the passing of that exam. All the resources of the schools are mobilized to pass that exam. You put the teachers who can best coach those children to pass those exams to teach the class four children.
If you're
focusing only on the passing of an exam, then you don't have the time to deal with the other issues that you're talking about.
No, but you are asking yourself, why is the only focus on passing the exam? The focus is on maintaining of a status quo, which is to keep everybody in a certain place. So therefore, it seems like...
And do you think that's desirable?
Have a focus, pardon me? That's not
desirable. Do you think that is desirable?
Of course not. Okay. And this is my problem. Because we are focusing, the powers that be have focused all the attention, and always focus all the attention, on that exam. As opposed to saying, why are we not fixing and addressing the problems that are occurring in primary schools? And what has been happening now, the trend is, and I have done any scientific analysis of it, but from just a layman's point of view, it seems to me that more and more people are choosing to send their children to private school as opposed to public school. And the reason being, at private school, in a lot of cases, you find that the child is then exposed to far more opportunity than at the public school.
That's not the reason.
Just a second.
The reason why the people who can afford it to send their children to private schools now is that the private schools do not tolerate the kind of indiscipline that sometimes happens in the public schools. And therefore, if you even though you got the money and you come there and you play the fool, you are kicked out. But we have allowed a situation in the public schools where indiscipline is rampant, and therefore it can be no proper teaching if there is indiscipline. A number of people are moving their children away.
But Leroy, I think that both yourself and Cyprian are being a bit unfair, because part of the reason why private schools will always flourish is because private schools are controlled environments with children that have a similar socioeconomic status. And as a result, you don't have the distractions that you may have in many of the public schools where you have the very socioeconomic status. And that's like the primary schools that are private are all doing better in the 11 plus exam simply because you have a set of children who have two parents that can focus, that ensure that they go to school, ensure they do their homework, that provide a learning environment that is different. While you have a public school that has children from all socioeconomic backgrounds, I'm not blaming anybody for the background from which they come, but I'm just saying that it is an educational reality, and it is a reality that the government cannot control, as Khalil was saying earlier. The government cannot control the environment that you go home to. However, in a private school, invariably it is controlled. So to say that the only reason that people are going to the private school is because they provide opportunities, they're going to the private schools because private schools are able to better control the output because they have a similar level of intake. When you have parent teachers meetings at private schools, right? There's no space for parking. There's parking all out on the road. When you have a parent teachers meeting at some of the government's newer secondary schools, you know, probably two or three parents will come, and the teachers will tell you that because the parents can't take time, don't have an interest in some instances. That is a big, big reason why you have a lot of the problems in the public secondary schools that you have. Anyhow, Cyprian, final word from you, because we're going to have to run.
Okay, one. Don't get to, when they said, I never said that was the only reason that people are more going to private schools.
One of the reasons.
But also, on top of that, the main point which I'm trying to get across is that we live in a time now where technology dominates. And this idea that a child has to go to one particular school, let's say Harrison College, and that school has to specialize, let's say, in languages or one thing, is wrong. We now have to look at the fact that we have the ability to say, okay, here we have access to science, here we have access to this language, blah, 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 whatever. Go and explore for yourself which one you like. Spend time at each of them. And if you feel like doing a mix of courses between one and the other, then do that. This is how we should be determining how our educational system, the future of our educational system, should be directed. I leave that for now.
All right. Thanks a lot, Cyprian. I always appreciate engaging with you on this issue. I know you have a lot of strong views. I have a WhatsApp message and I want to read. I've been ignoring the WhatsApps, unfortunately, in preference to the conversation in the studio. The gentleman says, relevant literature makes it clear that mixed ability and homogeneous ability groupings have equal number of advantages and disadvantages. In other words, either approach can work if you handle it properly. Mixed ability groupings can be a strain on the teacher, especially if abilities vary significantly. Homogeneous groupings, however, on the other hand, can be a strain on the slow student who is made to think that he is inferior to the average and above average student. The situation is further analyzed in the literature. What I would say, though, in response to that point, is that if you need to focus on what you could call homogeneous ability, can you not achieve that in a secondary school where you have homogeneous classes as opposed to a homogeneous school? So in other words, if you believe that there are bright students and there are slow students, if you believe that, I don't, then you can have a bright class in a normal school and you can have a slow class in a normal school, but there's really no reason why you have to assume that you have to have a bright school and a slow school, because that creates other kinds of social problems. So the gentleman is making a reasonable point. I don't agree with him fully, but certainly if you want to have a halfway, then you can do your homogeneous ability streaming within the context of a secondary school. Any other comments from the panel? Because we're going to go to the latest shortly, and perhaps we can leave the conversation in the panel until we do so. Gentlemen, George, Khalil, and Leroy?
Nothing else.
Yeah. Okay, George, are you still there? All right, I suspected that George may have gone back to school. Can we take another quick call, Dennis, then? Dennis, can we take another call? Okay. Let me just read some of the comments that we're having. I shake my head in this conversation all the time. Why put kids in the same schools regardless of aptitude, only to separate them within the school? You cannot teach Peter at the same pace of Paul if Peter is understanding a theorem and Paul can barely read. It makes no sense. The reality is, and what I am sure, is that the aim should be having all children performing the same. The focus should be on maximizing benefits of each child wherever they are. Better teachers, more therapy for children with behavioral and learning disorders, etc. We do all this, then we get to the real world, and objective tests tell us that the same children can't be doctors or astrophysicists or engineers. They don't have the capacity. What will they do? End those tests too? The exam isn't the problem. Find the root cause. The exam can be utilized better to help children so they can be appropriately challenged to help. The quality of teachers in public school is a part of the problem. Some of them cannot speak properly, to speak dialect. Why would you segregate within the school? It has the same effect. This is so frustrating. Of course, I'm frustrated too, sir, and I'm frustrated that the point that I'm trying to make, you know, persons like yourself just don't grasp. If we believe that we're in a world where astrophysics and engineering is more significant than political consulting, which is what I do, we will continue to have a problem, because I think that ultimately all children have talents. And the whole idea of saying that there are some talents that are more important than other talents creates all kinds of problems in this world. We have to get to a point where the school system pulls out of children what they're good at it helps them to be as good as possible at that, as opposed to saying, you know what, you have to be able to do quadratic equations on a particular level, and if you can't do that, then you're dumb. And our system should be designed to ensure that you should be able to do quadratic equations before you leave school, when the reality is you don't need to do quadratic equations in some instances. Today's parents can afford to pay private school as their children, as boys, 50 cents could feed a whole family of eight. And I guess this is a point that you were making in relation to that. Anyhow, as a parent, I hear saying that two children got the both. I'm sorry. As a parent, I hear saying, or I hear saying, said, I got two children. They both go to private school. And one speaks so well and cultured, while the other one, Lord help us. And they were sent to a public school. Perhaps I'm wasting my money. I don't know. Maybe you are. But anyhow, we have a distinguished panel, Dr. Leroy McLean, Khalil Kothiwala, and George Pilgrim. We're looking at Arabaro's vision for education in the 21st century. Is it still relevant? Dr. Brass Tacks, we're looking at Arabaro's vision for education and its relevance for the 21st century. And I have a panel, George Pilgrim, I believe he's left us now, but we are with Dr. Leroy McLean and also Khalil Kothiwala. George is with us. So we have the full panel in place. We're continuing until 2 p.m. and we have essentially just over an hour to continue our conversation about what has been happening. A lot of focus on the 11 plus. But I want to read for you a contribution has come from a gentleman who is a pilot, to the best of my knowledge. And he's saying that we have to realize that the world is evolving. When I was at Lodge School, computer programming was not something you can make a living doing in Barbados. It is not something that you can do well and command top dollar. The concept of a social media manager is a relatively new profession. The job did not exist 10 years ago. And you can make serious money doing that now. There are all kinds of in emerging trades and professions. And by pigeonholing kids, we are doing them a disservice. And certainly, sir, I could not agree with you more. I remember reading the work of Toffler, and I suspect that George Pilgrim would probably have read Toffler as well. And they spoke about the fact that the job of a flight engineer was created and disappeared in the space of 10 years, which is fascinating. It tells you the speed at which the world moves. So certainly, while Arabaro would have given us a foundation, I think that we make a mistake if we assumed that the system that he would have put in place is fit for purpose in the 21st century. And we need to move on. We need to make changes. We need to make amendments, and not just to the 11 plus. Maria is here saying, teachers, many of the teachers don't attend the meetings either. And I was speaking earlier about teachers. She's saying many of them don't attend the parent-teachers meetings either. So they should not be in a position to talk. Of course, many of them don't attend the parent-teachers meetings because many of them are extremely frustrated at the end of a day. And I was saying off air to a gentleman I was talking to, we have a challenge where a teacher with a master's degree and a diploma in education is appointed to one of the older secondary schools, and they go to work and they engage with a set of children who are genuinely interested in what they're doing, who parents have support. When they have a parent-teachers meeting, the parents come and they're generally investing in the school, the children's future. And then you have a teacher with the same qualifications that teaches at one of the newer secondary schools, and they go to work and they're frustrated from day one. Because of the fact that they have all of these challenges. It's interesting now that these teachers are operating in an online environment, and they will tell you that the situation they had in the classroom is now 100% worse, because you have a situation where the children who you had to attend school and sit in front of you are now no longer forced to do that. They can attend online, so they can amuse themselves while they're on. They will switch on these things so you believe that they're in the class, but of course, they're probably doing something else at the time. They don't have the video screen so that you can't see that they're there, and there are all of these problems. So these are the kinds of issues that we're discussing. As I said, we have a panel, and we're going to continue to explore these issues over the next few minutes. Let's go straight back to the phone lines and take a call on 434-1790. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon, ma'am.
Happy Arabaro Day, and thank you.
Happy Arabaro Day to you, too.
Thank you. The topic is more than pertinent. What would Arabaro's vision of us with respect to education in the 21st century? I think at the core would be to ensure that our children, who represent our greatest natural resource, have all the opportunities that the nation can provide to maximize their potential and their ability. We know we have a lot of focus on the 11 plus. The 11 plus has deficiencies. We acknowledge that. But if there is one thing that it reveals sometimes in all of its raw awfulness, is that there are significant issues that need to be addressed, as a previous speaker said, at the primary school level, with whether it's behavioral, family, educational deficiencies that too many children need, and they need to be addressed before they get to 11. If at age 11 you're scoring 0 to 20% after 7 years at school, clearly the resources that those children needed were not adequate to help that child. So that is number one. When we're looking at reviewing and revamping our education system, we can't just start at the 11 plus, which a number of esteemed commentators have already mentioned. We have to look at primary school from age 5, from age 7, when some children still cannot count to 10 or recite the alphabet. So that is number one. Number two, I certainly do subscribe to the view that in addition to focusing on academics, which is obviously important, that we should recognize and identify opportunities for children to excel in other attributes, whether it's creative, whether it's vocational, whether it's athletic or sports or whatever, and have those facilities in place for those opportunities to occur. Finally, what I don't think we can comment comprehensively on this situation without addressing the current crisis as obtained with CXC and the 2020 results. There are a percentage of children, it's a relatively small percentage, but they have been disadvantaged and they continue to be disadvantaged. And there is I guess the public might not recognize the extent to which that disadvantage has occurred, whether it's emotional, mental, physical, and it is not enough to simply say, suck it up, move on. They're overachievers with poor coping skills, all of those rather callous comments that have come to the fore. They are clearly systemic issues that need to be addressed, and they must be addressed. And this is from a constructive view of the benefit of CXC and thereby CARICOM and our people. We cannot continue into 2021 and beyond unless clearly certain systemic issues, which have manifested before, but certainly COVID revealed what were flaws in all of its horror. And certainly, if we're looking at the vision of the 21st century, and the same way that those of us have exhorted children to represent themselves, stand up for injustices, the same way that we're looking for reparations and justice for our forefathers and our descendants through reparations for slavery. Surely we cannot move forward as a society until we ensure that justice is achieved for those disadvantaged children. And I'm finding sometimes we seem to almost want to apologize for academic excellence. And the same way that we want to Rihanna, we want to Bolt, we want all of those people who have achieved in certain, in other spheres, academic excellence is something that should not be ashamed of. And we should certainly represent to ensure that those children that were disadvantaged this in 2020 achieve the reparation and justice that they deserve as well. So that is my contribution, and I thank you for your patience.